Devin and Morgana have been celebrating midlife love by getting married 100 times in 100 countries. They believe grown-up love gets better and more fun, especially for women. Everyone's smarter, wiser. Men are more relationship ready. And if they're not, it's obvious. Forget anything you were told about being too old or too late for love and adventure. Instead, get fresh new tips on dating, relating, and travel to exotic destinations. And best of all, call in for personal guidance, creating crazy, sexy midlife love in your life.
Okay, so welcome to Crazy Sexy Midlife Love. I'm Morgana, this is my husband, Devin. And we have been married 7 years as of this last Sunday. What have you learned from 7 years of marriage, my husband?
We can do this. You know, we can keep doing this. We, you know, things are good. Our lives are good. When I take stock of my life, you know, there's loads of things I can point at and go, well, that sucks, or these other things. But in general, life is pretty good. You know, and I'm just like, all right, I look around. Okay. Books, lots of books on the bookcases, you know. Things are okay. Life is, could always be a little bit better, but for the most part, you know, blessed. It was funny. I went out with my buddies. Can I share this story?
Oh, yeah.
I went out with my buddies for the first time in years. And these are guys that
since before COVID.
Before COVID. So normally what we would do is 3 or 4 times a year, we'd have sort of like a guy's night. And I know all their wives and their kids and all that stuff for many, many years. And so we didn't do that at all last year. And so we went out to this fancy steak dinner. And I don't even remember why I was telling
without wives.
Oh, without wives. Yeah, no, that had nothing to do with the story of why.
No, it had to do with middle age.
Middle age. Oh, well, yeah, no, that. Okay, so we came back, but that wasn't why I was telling the story. But I'm going to tell that story because, you know, I'm leaving the house. And these are guys that we would go out, we'd go have drinks, and then we would go, you know, whatever, we'd go play poker until 4 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, we'd be up all night. And so, you know, I said to my wife as I was leaving, I said, well, I'll be back late. She goes, well, I'll see you around 9, which was very insulting.
And true.
And true. Because I ended up, because it took a half hour to get home, and I got here at 9:30.
Yeah.
So we were all sort of like, okay.
Welcome to middle age.
You know, bedtime.
Party late.
That wasn't the story. I can't remember what the story is, though. So middle aged, more middle aged.
Right.
Doubly middle aged.
But happier. That's what nobody told me. I actually find this whole like aging process to be way more amusing than I anticipated. And I like older people more and more.
Yeah, no, I do too.
Yeah. Why is that, husband?
Well, because there's just a different intensity level on things. A lot of the intensity about things and pieces, like you've already walked through most of this stuff, you know, financial insecurities and just general logistics of life. Like the first time you do it, everything is highly charged. And then maybe a few subsequent times, it's sort of highly charged. And all of a sudden, one day you wake up and it's just like,
Well,
more of the nonsense, and you just walk through it and it's fine.
And when things are highly charged, because really dramatic stuff happens, especially over the last year, illness, financial anxiety. I mean, all of that still happens, but there's more water under the bridge. There's the sense of, I have survived a lot of stuff before. I can get through this. It's just different. I also have an appreciation for the wisdom of people who've been on the planet a really long time that, man, did I not see when I was young. and all those movies, those like teen movies that we grew up with where the parents are just the know-nothing comical characters. And I'm rooting for the parents now. I have a lot more empathy for the parents.
Right. Well, because who wants to be the boring slug who says no? But usually the no part is the part that's actually the most useful.
Right. It's like
not now, wait another day or another week or another year.
Don't do that stupid thing. How do I know it's stupid? Because I did it.
Right. Well, but ultimately that's the problem. Ultimately the problem is that you don't know any better and it feels good in a moment and you want to run with the feelings and all that, like that, exactly. Like, ooh, let's shimmy over this feeling and these things and we'll run out and do it. And yeah, it makes for a funny story. But it doesn't necessarily make for a happy life or a consistent life.
And just to be fair, like we run after feelings and adventure all the time now. Like that's why we love to travel. And I love to try weird things that might scare somebody else. Go to Azerbaijan. Where? Okay, great. You know, I just, there's still plenty of room for fun and adventure and excitement and experience. We're not dead, but there's less unintended consequence on the other end. Does that make that, you know what I'm talking about?
Well, the less unintended consequences happen because you are much more mindful of the consequences, for starters.
Yeah.
You're much more mindful that the things that can go wrong. So you're more likely, even if it's in a small way, are going to make your decision consciously rather than unconsciously, which I think is really important. In other words, if you just make a completely unconscious decision, hey, that girl over there is the cutest girl and I want to make her mine. Great. That's a wonderful thing. But then if you speak to her and you find out that she has like clearly a host of problems that you may not be equipped or want to deal with. And then you say, oh, but it doesn't matter because she's cute and love conquers all. Then that's where the rub. That's the rub.
I was the girl who was, I will save him. I will make up for all the pain and love he never experienced before.
Right.
He's a disaster. I see a project. And
right,
like,
but he's your disaster.
Right.
You're claiming his
and
disaster.
There came a time where it's just like life is too short for other people's disasters. I've been on that ride. I can write the dissertation. I don't have to do it again.
Right.
And it's not fun anymore.
No.
It's exhausting.
It is exhausting.
So the reason I want to bring that up is, and our guests are here, so we will introduce them in a second. We're talking about crazy sex and midlife love, and here we're sounding like really boring fuddy-duddies. But the thing is I think that we get to play more now because we don't have to pay as high a price on the other end because we've already paid those prices, so we don't have to go on those bad rides anymore. And now we get to just do the amazing, miraculous, cool stuff that we know is going to make us happy together.
So maybe we should introduce and admit
yes.
our guests.
Yes. So
and then do that.
Okay. I am really, really excited about today's guests from both a personal perspective and also because I think that they're going to be great for the show. And I'm really, really interested to hear what they have to say. But so we are bringing on Noah and Babette St. John. I know Noah better because I've known Noah personally for about 15 years. He's a coach like I am. And we met at a live event of a mutual coach of ours 15 years ago. But here's what's so weird. Okay, so he's a dude and I'm not. But he and I both danced professionally for the Boston Ballet Company. But wait, there's more. Then we both got degrees in religion from small, liberal East Coast colleges next to each other in the Pioneer Valley in Western Massachusetts. But wait, it gets better. And then we became failed actors. And then we became successful coaches, which, you know.
Does he have a degree in waiting?
Yes, apparently.
No, you should admit him and so then you can have this conversation so he knows that we're here.
I want to introduce him professionally now and Babette both because I know Noah better, but that doesn't mean he's more important than Babette. So let me introduce Noah St. John is known by many as the Millionaire Habits Coach, and he is CEO of SuccessClinic.com, a global peak performance and business growth company. Babette St. John is the Client Success Director for SuccessClinic.com. And together they work with Hollywood celebrities, eight-figure company CEOs, professional athletes, executives, entrepreneurs. They help their clients create healthy boundaries, improve communication, and get more time away from work. And they have a book, Noah's new book, Get Rid of Your Head Trash, about money. You can get that free at sendmeabooknoah.com. So that is their introduction. And now we are welcoming Noah and Babette.
Nice.
Hi.
Hi there. Hey, it's been a while.
Noah, Babette, meet my husband, Devin.
Hi, Devin. It's very nice to meet you.
Great to meet you.
Nice meeting you.
So we just celebrated our seventh wedding anniversary, but you guys win. You beat us 10 years.
10 years.
Whoa.
Yep.
Very exciting.
Yes.
And you've got like your big, gorgeous house in, I think, Ohio or something.
Northeast Ohio. Yeah. Yep.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Yay. Life is good.
Yes, it is. Yeah, life is good.
So you published a piece on 10 things that you learned from 10 years of marriage. And I was like, oh my God, I need to get you guys on the show. So how would you like to present your 10 things?
Oh, well, however you'd like to do it. I mean, we can talk about each point. We can, you know, discuss however you like, whatever you want to do. We can dive right in.
How about we start with one?
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
So lesson number one, what I said about the 10 lessons that I've learned from 10 years of marriage, the first and most important lesson is find someone who gets you. All right. Mm. So the point is that, you know, each of us is looking for, of course, that special person, right? That completes us, to use Jerry Maguire's language, right? You complete me. But I mean, when I was dating prior to meeting Babette, I would date, you know, girls, and I would say something that I just thought was absolutely hilarious. And they go, what the heck was that? And I go, oh, brother, you know, never mind, forget it. And so it reminded me of that scene in When Harry Met Sally. Remember that movie? And Billy Crystal is talking to Matt Ryan about a date that he went on, and he said a joke that the other girl didn't get, and Meg Ryan laughed at it. And so that's the point. So, you know, in my post, what I wrote was that Babette is my Meg Ryan, only way hotter. So anyway, so
expertly played.
Thank you so much.
Right. Well, and played, true, all of that. Yes.
Exactly, exactly. And so, I mean, you know, that's what we're all looking for. So again, I'm speaking to the people, of course, who, you know, may be looking for that special someone. And if you're already in a relationship, well, naturally, you got to make sure that it is, you know, someone who gets you, because, hey, we all have our quirks, our things that we think are funny, and maybe others don't so much. Another, by the way, a great way to do this is through what women very often do, and men, I don't know if they do it enough. So maybe I'm speaking to the men here more than the women for the moment, but is make sure you test them. Okay. And here's what I mean. Women are always testing men, right? Devin, you know this, and every man listening to this program knows that we're always getting tested every day, no matter how long.
But it's a secret. I think it's a secret. The women think it's a secret.
Oh yeah. Right. And so it's so subtle, right? You know? And so my point is that, like, that was the test is the joke test, but also the rap test, because I love doing rap. And one of the tests that I would do is when I would do a rap, what was her response? And usually before Babette, their response was, and I went, okay, forget it.
He's a great rapper.
So I was in the car. So we'd been dating for a while, you know, when we met and we were dating. So I put in a Will Smith CD and I said, okay, this is a big test here. So I started rapping to Will Smith, right? And which I just do in my sleep anyway. And so I was like, okay, this is it, right? And then at the end of the song, I looked at her. This was in the car, right? So I'm like, oh boy, this is it. And she goes, oh my God, that was so awesome. Can you do that for my son? And I'm like, sold. Done. So that was it.
Yeah, he's a great rapper.
Well, anyway, so find someone who gets you. That's lesson number one.
Did you have any criteria on sort of like how to know when somebody gets you? Because that could be a very personal thing.
Absolutely. Well, for me, it was the joke test and the rap test. Those were the two most important things. Now, I did have a laundry list of what I wanted, you know, in a woman. And she had to be blonde. Check. She had to be shorter than me because I'm not that tall. And I have, you know, my big ego in pictures. I have to look tall. Right. So I can't stand tall women. And I'm like, no, that's not going to work. Right. Because, no, I look short. And I'm like, forget it. So luckily, she's 5'3", 5'2", 5'1½. So she's petite. I was giving you a little extra credit. But you know, I'm not that tall. So I'm like, so see, next to her, I look tall. See in all my pictures. So and anyway, I just went on like that. And I wanted a beautiful figure, which she has. And so all of those things. So, you know, I had a long list and she checked every box. So it was pretty awesome. It took a long time though.
So to defend, well, not to defend Babette, no doubt she can do that herself. But Babette, did you have your own sort of criteria of being, you know, of him getting you?
Well, it took me 4 times to meet the right one. And Noah listens. I love that. He actually listens to me. And he actually can complete what I was saying. So that was that was awesome. And that I love my kids. And my son was, 10? He was 10, 11.
10, 11. Mm-hmm.
And it was just, and my twin daughters were in their 20s. So Noah was really good at bringing the family together. So it was really nice. And still is. I mean, every day seems like, you know, the first time with him. But he listens and and takes walks with me. And that was very important.
Did you, Babette, know what you were looking for? Did you have your own list of criteria ahead of time?
Mine had to be, he had to be tall, dark, and handsome. Dark
Check.
Hair.
Okay, I guess. All right, good. I'll take it. That was easy.
No, really, it was bringing out the best in me, too. Listening to me. My kids were in a lot of, they had some health issues. So he was a great supporter and listening to my kids. I mean, he's a great, I don't want to say helper, you know, a supporter and makes me laugh, makes me smile, but takes the time with me. That was very important.
I have a question getting off our top 10. What needed to change within each of you to make you ready to find your person?
Yeah, for me, Morgana, it was really a question of I was accepting crumbs. I was really accepting crumbs. And that meant that, you know, if any girl paid any attention to me whatsoever, you know, that was it. And because as a kid, in my teenage years, I had Coke bottle glasses. I had a face full of acne. I had not shoulder length hair, but shoulder width hair. I was a skinny, scrawny nerd. And so I couldn't get a date to save my life. And so I went through that awkward stage from age 15 to 40. And so basically I had no self-esteem at all. And so when I was right before I met her, I was in a very, very abusive relationship. She was abusive to me and not physically, but mentally and emotionally. And so, and I was with her and this sucks. I was with her for 4.5 years. So I took that shit for 4.5 years because I had no self-esteem. And so this is one of the messages that we, you know, when we work with couples, like we do something called the couples retreat, where we actually work with couples to help them improve their relationships, their marriage, you know, get that spark back, whatever that might look like for each couple. But my point is that, you know, that was one of the things for me, having no self-esteem, I just accepted crumbs. And so I was in this god-awful relationship for 4.5 years before I finally got the courage to leave her. And so for me, it was saying, who the hell am I? And why do I have to accept crumbs? What is that all about? Why do I always get the short end of the stick? And of course, it was me accepting that, right? And
it's
so
like a negative affirmation.
Exactly. And so I had to work on myself, doing all the inner work, of course, that I have been teaching other people for 20 plus years.
Isn't that annoying?
It's annoying as hell. It's the worst in the world. So anyway, that's what it was for me, was doing all that inner work. Because I'll be honest, I really, really hadn't focused on relationships. I was really focused on my business and growing my business. And so when I was with that person, you know, that's what I was focused on. But of course, ironically, my business sucked too, right? So that nothing was working. It was all awful. And you know what I mean? So that getting out of that relationship was the turning point for me. Mm-hmm. And then finding Babette, who, I mean, when I met her, she was so beautiful. She was so loving. She was so fun, funny. And just talk about a great listener. She's a great listener. And she lets you be yourself. And she allows each person that she's with, whether it's me or our clients, I see our clients just glow, you know, when they're around her, even if it's on the phone or on Zoom. I mean, she just brings out the best in people. And she's always done that. I mean, since I've known her, and I'm sure since long before I knew her. But my point is that I went, can anybody really be this good? And number one, and number two, I said, well, there's no way in hell she's going to want to be with me, right? So when I called her to go on our first date, I absolutely expected her to reject me. I knew she would, right? Because I'm like, I'm this scrawny, skinny, ugly, funny-faced guy. You know, that was still the picture I had of myself in my head. And so I said, of course she's going to reject me. I said, well, I said, hey, would you like to, you know, would you like to go out? She said, sure. And I went, huh? What? What? This is me, Noah, you're talking to. Yeah, I know. I'd love to go out. So I was totally shocked. So men, for all of you men out there, if you're looking for the right person, and also, of course, for the women, take that chance, right? That's the lesson. Take a chance. If you're still looking for that right one, take a chance. You never know. And don't listen to that voice in your head that says, oh, I'm not good enough. That was what it was for me.
So can I ask you, because you said a lot of really important things in this description just here. By the way, riddled with acne myself, all of those kinds of things. Definitely identified with what you were talking about. But you talked about sort of like, here's all of these things that you're looking out into the world and going, oh, this is no good and it's terrible. And at some point you sort of turned inward. What was the turning point for you? And for me, it tends to be sort of like what a dear friend of mine says is a slight shift in perception leads to great change. And to me, a lot of this stuff that we deal with just as people, and I think one of the things that we absolutely start getting over as we get older is these impressions of ourselves. Do you know what I mean? Not good enough, tall enough, right, interesting, attractive, all of those kinds of things. So what was the thing? Was there a moment for you where all of a sudden it's like, where it just kind of clicked into place? You know, what was that moment?
Yes, absolutely. So getting out of that abusive relationship, that was my rock bottom for relationships. I've had other rock bottoms like for my life or my business, but that was my rock bottom for relationships. And the other thing, of course, as I mentioned, you know, my business and my relationship was very tied together. So she actually put me in $40,000 of credit card debt, which again, I allowed that to happen. So I'm not playing the victim. I'm just saying I was dumb enough to stay in that relationship for all that time and let her take advantage of me. So again, for the lesson is for all the men and all the women is you've got to realize, which I did not. I did not realize that I had any value. I really had no person there ever to show me that I had value. So when I met Babette, and she is the most loving person that I've ever met, and she saw me and saw value in me, it was really hard. It was really hard because it had never, I mean, and I was 40 years old. I was 40 years old when I met her. So it was a long, 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 long time of shit, of nothing, of awfulness. And so I guess you know, to answer your question, Devin, so the inner work that I did, the main thing was, yes, I definitely used my own affirmations method, Morgana, which you mentioned earlier. And of course, I've written lots of books about here. These are some of the books that I've written. The Book of Affirmations and affirmations.com, for those of you who aren't familiar with my affirmations method. But I did, of course, use affirmations. What was funny, and you did too. And what was funny about that was, as I mentioned earlier, I just hadn't been using them in my relationships. I just forgot. Isn't that ironic, right? It's like, hello, I teach all these things and I forgot these are for myself. So once I started affirming, and by the way, I was also living in New England at the time when I left that other relationship. So I had to move here to Ohio, and that didn't make any sense. Like, because I knew one person here, a friend of mine, Scott, who we're fellow speakers. We had spoken at an event, and he said to me on the phone, we're talking on the phone. He said, wait, why don't you move to Ohio? It'll be fun.
Yay.
And I said, Ohio, fun. I'm not getting it. I don't get it. But something inside of me, right, just said, dude, you're supposed, that's where you're supposed to be. And I'm like, what? That doesn't make any sense, right? So again, what's the lesson? The lesson is, hey, sometimes you got to do things that your head say doesn't make any sense, but your gut or your instinct or your higher self, whatever you want to call it, says, yep, this is where to go. And I got here, and I did. I knew one person, my friend Scott. He introduced me to one of his friends, and that friend introduced me to Babette. So literally, it was 3 weeks after moving here that I manifested.
And we've been together ever since.
14 years now.
That's amazing. That's wow. That's an incredible story. Did you at least move to Cleveland?
Hell no. No. I moved to the wonderful city of, well, we're now in is North Canton. But prior to that, it was Norton. And then we bought a house in Green. And then we just bought this. Well, it's a 6,000 plus square foot. We have to call it, you know, a mansion,
a
basically. It's like a Barbie house. And it's we call it Success Manor. Because
like a heart-shaped tub. I saw the photo.
I know, right? A heart-shaped, what's a jacuzzi tub even? It's pretty awesome. At the end of a hard day at the office, you're just going to the jacuzzi tub, the heart-shaped jacuzzi tub with the wife.
And a it steam is shower.
Pretty awesome. A sauna.
And a sauna. A
koi pond in the back.
So all of a sudden, you know, I was sort of tongue in cheek when I was talking about Ohio just a moment ago. All of a sudden, it doesn't sound all that bad.
I know, right? I know. It's amazing.
Are you a big football fan? Because isn't that where they have the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, we're 10 minutes right from the Pro Football Hall of Fame. It's a wonderful thing. In fact, my dad's going to be visiting soon. We're going to have a, you know, father-son time at the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So any of you watching or listening to this program, you know, Pro Football Hall of Fame, it's a great, if you're a football fan, you know, it's Mecca, right? It's a great, great place. They do a great job.
Excellent. I have family in Ohio, so that's where my father was for his final years. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous state.
Yes.
We love it.
Especially when I'm in LA and you go to Ohio and it's not a desert. It's green. There's green stuff there.
We have lots of green here and, you know, birds and butterflies and in the backyard. Mm-hmm. So we say all the time, this is pretty awesome. Cause we were thinking about going to Vegas or someplace and we're like, why? This is pretty amazing. So yeah.
The winters aren't even bad.
Not anymore.
So lesson number two.
Oh my God. That was just one. Holy crap.
Yeah.
Holy crap. All right. We better speed this up. Cause oh yeah, my
by,
God.
By
this
the way, we have 7 minutes to do the other nine.
No, that's
yeah. Right. Kidding. Exactly.
That's
all right. Ready? All right. Well, anyway, lesson two is what I said is laugh together. And that, I mean, I don't know any relationship, you know, gurus, experts who would not say that, right? I mean, laughing is, it is.
Healing.
It's the best medicine. There's no way around it. And what I wrote in my post, for those of you curious, is, you know, we don't exactly have the same sense of humor. Like, for example, I grew up on Monty Python and she's like, what the hell's a Monty Python? You know,
what?
And I'm like, what?
I was...
Yeah, she and country, I showed it country. To her and she's like, I don't get it. And I'm like, I tried to explain it to her. I'm like, you know,
I watched
you,
it.
You like, pretty much had to be there in the 70s. Like in the 70s, it was hilarious. But now it didn't quite age as well as you think. Right. So the point is, you got to make sure that you find things you laugh about together. You know, so we do. We find, you know, we watch movies and TV shows that we laugh together. And if we don't laugh together, we just find something else. You know, it's not worth it. You know, oh, I think it's hilarious. Oh, it's not, I don't get
but
it.
But we can okay. go to the store
find something else.
And have fun. I mean, it's connecting with the right partner. And like I said, it took me a while to find someone with you know, that has those qualities, but every day is an adventure.
But find things to laugh about. That's the right thing. Find things that make you happy, because it's very easy to focus on things that get you depressed, right? I mean, just turn on the news and it's easy to get depressed. So just find those things that make you smile, that make you laugh, and then do them together.
So can I ask Babette a question?
Sure.
What was the thing, like, when did you know? So all of a sudden, Noah shows up just
or out Steve, of the whatever he can.
I don't know where that came from, and I knew that.
Steve, it is. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, it's quite all right. When okay. did you
he,
know?
He married. We had a marriage ceremony where I was called by a totally different name.
No.
Yeah, in the medieval one.
Well, that wasn't by me.
Okay.
That was by our Latin Vulgari hosts, which would have been pretty terrible.
Yeah, that would not have been good.
Right.
So,
moving on.
How did you know that Noah was the guy for you? Was there a moment in the dating? Like, how soon did it?
There was a moment. The very, very first time that I met Noah, first of all, I love the name Noah. I love the Bible, and I'm very spiritual. And I never met a real Noah. And so he had a purple shirt on. And the very first day I met him, I swear it was like angels singing. There was just a light in the doorway. I'm not making it up. And he had this purple shirt on and he just glowed. And I knew from that moment on, I fell in love with him.
So this was before he asked you out.
Right. Well, on the phone, when he was talking, I loved his voice, because you can hear in someone's voice the tone and a little bit about a person, right? And I have intuition. So talking on the phone, there was just an awesome feeling, you know, in his voice. And I could hear him that when he goes to speak, I love listening to Noah, and I could hear him say the same thing over and over and over again, but I love his voice. And I think that's very important too, is to find things that you love about the person and keep them, you know what I mean? Like when you get upset at each other or something like that, you just think of those awesome things, the voice or the cute things, and then it, you know, it's not so bad. You know what I mean?
I agree.
Does that make sense?
Makes perfect sense. Okay. Sounded good to me. But I like having a halo. Why not?
No. When he walked into the room, there is just something about that. And I fell in love with him from that moment on.
What can I say?
Yeah.
I swept her off her feet.
Yeah.
Did you have a similar experience, Noah?
Well, I mean, I knew she was very beautiful. And like I said, I never thought she'd be interested in me. So I absolutely thought she was out of my league. So, I mean, I was very attracted to her. And then as we were talking, I'm like, I really liked her. So those are two different things, of course. You know, there can be a very good looking person, whether a male or a female. And then you start talking to them, you're like, yeah, you know, not so much, right? And so I'm sure we've all had that experience. So my point is that she was very beautiful on the outside, physically and looks, but then as I got to know her, she's even more beautiful on the inside. She's the most loving person I've ever met. That's very rare.
And he took me on walks and he got to know me. Nobody really listened to me before. And Noah took the time and knew the inside of me and cared about what I thought about, you know, and.
So that, do you think because you are really beautiful that men just kind of would stop there in your past?
I think that, yeah, I had a lot of people attracted to me, but not really. I'm a giver. So I give and give and give, but nobody really gave back to me. And Noah's the very first one.
She was with a lot of takers.
Yeah.
Another thing just occurred to me is that it may not have been safe to receive from other people. And Noah created a safety to allow him to give to you and for you to accept it.
Right. And
Well, what's unique about Babette is because she is so beautiful physically, most times when you have a very beautiful woman, women hate her. You know, women hate that woman because they get jealous. Well, when Babette walks into a room, she just lights up the whole room. But what's amazing is that women and men fall in love with her. Everywhere we go, and you know, we've been traveling together for more than 10 years now, because even before we got married, we were traveling together. And then since we've been married, you know, of course, before COVID and so forth, but, you know, we would travel and we'd go into whether, you know, I was speaking at a conference, at an event, at a private workshop, wherever I was speaking around the world, and men and women would just gravitate to her and just like fall in love with her instantly.
Well,
I'd be standing there going, hey, I wrote all the books. How about me? What am I, chopped liver over here? And they're like, yeah. We want to talk to Babette. I'm like, son of a, what do I have to do? Jeez.
Well, I can speak from my own experience about that is that Babette really, really, really leads with love. So she's just so generous. It's like, oh my God, I'd never met you before. And I feel like you already love me was like my first experience of you, Babette.
Well, same with you, Morgana. I connected to you just like that when I met you.
So clearly.
You look great. You look the same. I love your eyes. You look beautiful and happy.
So let's make this more about the audience again. Let's get
back. Oh, yeah.
Right. We have a show. Okay. What is number two?
All right. So I'm going to put three and four together. Okay.
Three and four, we did two. Two is laughter. Three. And, right. Okay.
So three and four is about comparison. Now, everybody says don't compare yourself to others. I say compare yourself because number one, we do it anyway. I mean, social media is that. And so we're always on social media. Right. So here's what I say. Compare, but compare strategically. Meaning, if you see a couple or people or whatever, you know, on social media and they're doing something that you want to do, then instead of saying, oh, I'll never have that, say, how can I have that? Right. How can we do that, honey? Right. So let's say
that's what we do.
And we do that, you know, so let's say they're visiting Aruba or Puerto Rico or whatever the heck. Right. And you go, hey, honey, would you like to go to Aruba? Yeah, sure. Absolutely. So, all right, let's schedule it. Right. Now, of course, I understand that that's not always applicable. Right. You can't always do that. But what I'm saying to you, and that, of course, this is what we work with our clients on. Right. If that's a goal you have, well, let's put the plan together to make the goal happen. Right. Because if otherwise, it's just a dream. Right. But the worst thing is to let the dream devolve into jealousy and envy. That's the worst sort of comparison. Right. So comparison stupidly or non-strategically leads to envy and jealousy. That's what most people do. They don't realize they're doing it. Of course, they're not doing it on purpose. So the point is, I'm saying compare, but compare strategically, meaning, hey, I want that too. Honey, what do you think? Would you like to do that? Or would you like one of these? Or would you like to try that? And then, you know, if it goes over well, fine. All right, then let's put a plan together to do it. Put your plan and get a goal. And if you need help, you know, you can come to people like us. They can go to you, whoever it is. They can get a coach. They can get help for it. You know, we have online courses. We have our couples retreat. We have Millionaire Habits retreat. Lots of ways to help people reach their goals. But that's what I'm saying is compare, but compare strategically.
What I got to say something. What I love about Noah's programs and when we're coaching couples and stuff is that how he gets people to actually see inside themselves and also see the beauty in the other person that maybe they first seen back in the day, you know, but bringing it out like COVID. Okay. A lot of people were in the same building, same home, you know, seeing each other 24/7. Mm-hmm. And Noah has a way of, we brought a lot of people together so they can see, and even their kids, the family, you know, they became closer because seeing how that person's feeling is what I want to say. And because you're with them 24/7 and there's ways, there's unique ways and things that you can do to actually bring out the best in somebody instead of being irritated about the little things. Right.
Exactly.
So, of course, that leads to another question. And I know we're going to get back to numbers 5 and 6 soon. What do you suggest couples do to sort of bring that out, that love back out from each other?
Well, it always has to do with what you focus on, right? What you focus on grows. So if you focus on what you hate, guess what you get more of? What you hate. If you focus on what annoys, if you focus on what annoys you, you get more annoyed. So you got to focus on, just like when you were starting to date, when you, at the beginning of dating, what everything's like magical. Oh my God, this is great. This is great. This is great. This is great. Then you start to live together. And you're like, boy, I wish they'd pick up their socks. Boy, why do they squeeze the toothpaste from the middle? What kind of an idiot squeezes the toothpaste from the middle? He squeezes it from the end. Right? Exactly. I knew that was going to be one of them. I did that on purpose. I knew that. You see what I mean? So there you go, right? Why do you have this? You see? And you start to focus on the annoyances and you forget all the things that you love. So, I mean, and that's just, honestly, it's a conscious effort, because boy, isn't it easy to get focused on the wrong things.
You bring up an interesting point of being conscious. Mm-hmm. I think personally, it's one of the things that is critical to not only to relationships, but living well across the board. Because I think that so much of the mistakes, at least if I think about my own history, most of the mistakes I made were almost solely based on me reacting to a thing and right. trying to fix it in sort of like almost a desperate mode. And I found that sort of that consciousness, the awareness of how is my relationship manifesting today? How am I treating my wife in this moment right now? Those seem to be the much far and away greater solutions to things than, shall we say, oh, I got to run out and buy flowers to fix it.
Exactly. Right.
Which has never fixed anything ever.
But had some
flowers after a fight.
Right. Flowers after a fight, maybe for 2 seconds or something like right. that. How do you use consciousness? And certainly Babette and Noah, how do you guys work at it?
Well, I think you said it very well, Devin. And again, one of the things we work with our clients on, you know, in the couples retreat and in our online programs is exactly that, is becoming conscious, becoming aware. I mean, we use the word focus. It's what you focus on. What you focus on grows. It's just that simple. And so if you focus on annoyances, you'll certainly find them. I mean, it's very, very easy to find things that annoy you about the, you know, the best of us, the saints, if you'll forgive the pun, because we are saints. But anyway,
Oh, that's right. St. John.
We are saints. Yeah. But anyway, you know what I mean? So, and so you've got to consciously shift your focus, which is hard. I mean, it doesn't have to be as hard as some people make it. However, I'm sure we all know couples or individuals who, you know, are always saying to their, to either, you know, us as counselors, coaches, or to their significant other, you know, how come you always this? And why don't you ever that? And it's like, well, you know, that some of these things aren't going to change. You know, if they squeeze the toothpaste from the middle, that's probably what they're going to keep doing. You know,
they lose the cap
or whatever. So, you know, it's like, what do you want to do? You know, what are you going to focus on? So, I mean, that to me, that's how we look at what you're using the term consciousness.
Oh yeah. And I actually, and that may be why our relationship is happy, is that it feels easy to look at Devin with gushy rose colored glasses, because I've been doing it so long that it's just habitual. It doesn't take effort.
Right.
But I think that is in the end what love is a positive bias.
That's right.
A positive filter when you look at this person that you choose.
I like what you said, Morgana, right. Because right, some people have to put on the rose colored glasses to see their person again, their partner again. Mm-hmm. And the expectations, because Noah can't expect me to be Noah, and I can't expect Noah to be me, but there's that adapting, you know what I mean? If I know that, like for instance, I love, after he eats, you know, his meal, or I love, bringing Noah the food, you know, at the dinner table.
Yes.
Welcome to Midlife Love. Yes.
What I want to say is make it easy on him. Right. Mm-hmm. So my kids would come in and go, why are you taking Noah's plate? You know, this is when we first were together. And I said, because I want to show him, that's just an act of showing that I appreciate him. So I'll take his plate and get, you know, get rid of the dinner plate. Okay. Where, not the expecting that he has to do his own and I have to get my own. And
I don't expect her to do it either.
No, he don't.
I don't say, all right, honey, bring me my dinner now. I mean, that would be aggravating. I mean, that, I don't think I would like that.
But it's the little
you know,
things.
So I would never do, I don't expect her to do it. And she does it anyway. That's what's awesome. Because if I were demanding it or expecting it, then she probably wouldn't want to do it so much.
But it's taking the time to do the little things that, you know, right. that would make a huge difference, you know?
So. No, I think you bring up an incredibly important point, because most of what we're dealing with in our lives are not the huge catastrophes or wonderful celebrations. Most of the stuff that we are dealing with on a daily basis is the little things. Right. So when we pay attention to small details, that just means there's one fewer thing that she has to worry about today. Right. And it's usually a handful of things, right?
Exactly.
And no, I don't want to wait on her hand and foot, nor do I expect her to do that for me, but to do little nice things. Because I think the important thing, and I always talk about this, mm-hmm. is that I picked her out of everybody, mm-hmm. right? Not to say that I had an avalanche of possible, you know, women.
He had everybody.
Well, right. I mean, that just look at him. Come on.
But the point is,
gorgeous, like, Morgana.
This is the person that I chose. So from that standpoint, you know, she's sacred. And the more I treat the relationship sacred, the more special and confident she can feel within the relationship, where she doesn't have to worry about itty bitty little things. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Where if I make a mistake, which I'm bound to, she's more likely to overlook it because there's already a longer list of things that I was attempting to accomplish that serve her during our average day together. Because I'm going to mess up, right?
We all do.
I'm going to say the wrong name. I'm going to do some ridiculous thing that wasn't intended. Please forgive me, by the way.
He's coming through.
So, you know, I mean, so, but it's a process, right? And so sometimes the things I think will make her happy don't necessarily make her happy, right? And then I have to switch gears to find something that I think will serve her in a better way, to let her know that she's important.
Exactly.
That's why we're getting married 100 times in 100 countries, because I just need that depth of reassurance.
Why not?
Right.
Why not?
That's whatever works.
Why not?
No, we're 25 weddings in. I don't
know. I get it. Okay. I get it.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just a thing. So are we on to, did we do 3 and 4?
Yes, we did.
Now it's 5.
Okay. So what's 5?
So 5 is something near and dear to my heart, because it is something that we call take out your head trash every day. Amazingly, I've written a book called Take Out Your Head Trash about money.
And the link to the book will be in the show notes.
Exactly. So it's sendmeabooknoah.com. Very easy to remember. But basically, your head trash is the voice that says I'm not good enough. Right. And so every day we all have to work on taking out that trash that says I'm not enough. In fact, ironically, over 20 years ago, my very first newsletter that I ever sent out, when I was in my 300 square foot basement apartment, when I started my company, successclinic.com, with $800 and a book on HTML, my very first newsletter was called You Are Enough, because I realized that most people don't think they're enough. Now you see a lot of people talking about you are enough. I'm like, dude, I was talking about that 2 decades ago. So, you know, whatever. Anyway, but my point is, now what we talk about and what we teach is getting rid of that head trash that says I'm not enough. So that, I mean, I've basically written 15 books on this one subject saying, hey, you are enough, right? But we have to really get that, because, I mean, you know, for those of us who had a shitty childhood like I did, you know, that can take a while.
Well, I think that, you know, so many people address so many issues, you know, money, love, health, mm-hmm. career. They're like all doors to the same room. And I think the core issue of everything is that feeling that we're not enough, not mm-hmm. good enough, not smart enough, not whatever enough. I think that is mm-hmm. the core wound of being a human being. So bravo.
Thank you.
Tuning into that.
Well, and that's, like I said, I've basically written all these books because I needed them. Mm-hmm. And of course, a lot of people have said that, you know, they've changed their lives. So anyway, so that's lesson 5. So, and lesson six is what I wrote, is that marriage is not 50-50, right? You hear this all the time. Well, marriage is 50-50. I'm like, where are you at? What planet are you on, dude? Because everybody, I should say, each person in the marriage firmly believes that they do more than the other. Each person firmly believes that they sacrifice more than the other. Each person firmly believes that they work harder than the other. And guess what? They're both right. You know, so I could give you all the arguments of why I work way harder in this relationship than she does. And guess what? She can give you the exact same argument back, and we're both right. So the point is, it's not 50-50. It's 100-100, and just get over it. You know what I mean? It's like, if you're trying to be even, forget it. You know,
no scoreboard.
So going back to the point about, you know, the dishes, right? I mean, sometimes she doesn't take the dish, you know, she's talking on the phone or whatever. I'm like, I don't sit there and go, oh my God, you didn't take my dish, honey. What is wrong with you today? I go, just take the damn dish. I mean, get over yourself. Right. You know what I mean? So this isn't 1950. We gotta kind of roll with the times here.
I love that.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great one. And, you know, truthfully, if you're giving 100%, if you're really trying within the relationship, I think what's important is there's some days where somebody is depressed or had just four small things that they're just not going to get over for that day or that week or that month, right? Sometimes somebody gets clinically depressed. Who knows, right? Somebody's parent gets sick or there's a million things that can go wrong. Mm-hmm. And part of the commitment is my job is to help serve her when that's the better for better or for worse line. Right.
Exactly.
It's in there for time immemorial because that's what's bound to happen. There's going to be some nonsense that's going to happen. It's going to happen to everybody. So the more you get used to that idea of just like, okay, I'm here to be of service when the chips don't fall in her direction or mine, hopefully she'll show up, but she always has. So I'm not too concerned about that. Mm-hmm. But I mean, part of that is the more that you do that, I think the more the other person is going to feel safe, secure, loved, you know, that they have a team member, because there's, you know, dark nights of the soul.
Yeah, 100% doesn't look the same every single day. Sometimes we have less capacity or more capacity. But I love that. I think that's so beautiful to take the scorekeeping and the 50-50 out of it. I think it's genius. Right.
Exactly. Do you want to go to our next lesson, since just in the interest of time here?
Yeah.
So what I wrote was that our next lesson is always speak well of your spouse.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and what I said is that, you know, if you ever make a passing remark about your spouse, let's say to a family member or a friend, you know, and you say, oh, he always does blah, 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 or she blah, 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 right? And then guess what? That person will repeat it back to you a million times, right? Remember when she did that to you, and remember when he did that, and you're like, I don't even remember that. You know, it's like, what? You know, you got over it, but see, it was your fault. I'm speaking to, you know, you in general, because you said it, right? So don't do that. Just shut up. Don't say anything to anyone else. And please, for the love of God, don't post it on social media. I mean, that's idiotic, right? I mean, oh, and my spouse and blah, blah, blah. Now, again, all of these, I get it. I mean, sometimes, like in my case and in her case too, you know, you weren't with the right person, you know, prior to us, we weren't with the right person. So it's certainly, I'm not suggesting that, you know, you just take a bunch of shit. I mean, that's, you see, but it's
I respect the person.
It's tough. The point is, if you're in that committed relationship that you know that you want to be committed to, then don't say it in public. My God, just keep your mouth shut.
So that goes back to that focus thing, because when you put it out in the public, it kind of magnifies it.
Exactly.
Sometimes,
especially with family, if you're talking to your family and I used to be guilty of this. I never do it with her. But she really taught me this lesson, because she has never, ever said anything bad about me to any family member ever. And I mean, there's plenty of stuff that she could have said, you know, you know, and she doesn't, she never has, never. And
my,
I know,
kids
she won't
respect him. And also my family respects him. And they love him because I keep that out. I mean, if like back in the beginning, you know, things that would irritate me or something, because I demand respect for him.
Yeah.
And I'm the first defender. So.
Exactly. That's awesome.
But
I get along so well with Devin's mother. I'm the first partner who has ever really gotten along with his mother. And the reason is...
Ever.
Oh,
with a capital E.
It's so easy. Because all we do is talk about how much we love Devin.
Beautiful.
Oh, that's beautiful.
We have that in common. It's beautiful. Fun.
Well, it's the same with my mother with her. And here it is. If I call my mother, here's what it goes like. Hi, Mom. Oh, hi, honey. And then Bebe going, hi, hi, Carol. Oh, hi, Bebe.
I gotta say something.
I'm chopped liver again. How did I get chopped liver again? No, I wrote all these books. You see this? I gotta work for a living. When she just shows up, la la. Wow, man.
But when we were getting married and his dad was his best man. His dad was
he went on and on about her, and like I got two sentences. I'm going, wow, man. The crumbs over here again. I get the crumbs again.
It's so funny.
But I mean, I get it. See, the point is, it still looks good on me because, see, I got this. I got this. So, I still won.
But also, I help them to see the greatness.
Exactly. She absolutely does that.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right. So let's see. Moving on. So our next lesson is speak up when something's bothering you, but do it in private. Okay, so that's, again, what I'm talking about, exactly this lesson. So these two lessons go together. So, again, if let's say your spouse, your partner does something that, you know, you don't like, talk about it to the person.
Not in public. That room.
Not in public. Right. Don't do it. Just keep your damn mouth shut. And you think that's the easiest thing. It's the hardest thing. Because what's the easiest thing to do is gossip, right? And blah, blah, blah. Because you get that, you know, you get that that immediate sense of, oh, see, oh, poor you, or victim, or whatever. And everybody loves to play that card. It's the dumbest card to play, and it'll come back to bite you, I promise. And so I definitely learned this from her, is just shut up, keep your mouth shut, and
go in private.
I mean, if something is bothering you, don't just bottle it up and don't talk about it. That's not what I'm saying at all.
Right.
I'm saying just don't say it in public. There's a forum for everything, and that forum is not social media.
Well, there is, you know, when you talk about gossip, you know, when you look at sort of like religion and things like that, every religion has a thing about not gossiping. Like, yeah, it's right. Forbidden because at some point you can't unring the bell.
Right.
You can't undo it.
That's exactly right.
You can't undo it. And I think it's a really important one to kind of just keep that in mind. I mean, don't get me wrong. We've had our rows because, well, we're human. Exactly. But it's not something that, you know, you take it to, as you said, social media, et cetera. I think it's a tough one to overcome for the other person, because now on top of sort of like, hey, maybe I messed up. Now you're dealing with sort of like the level of whatever potential humiliation may be piled on top of that.
That's right. And it's an easy game to play, but it's a dumb game to play. And there's no winners. There's only losers.
Real quick. It's just like, say, a husband and wife is, we had a couple like this. A husband and wife is always bantering. And then the wife would go and talk to her family, right? And then, oh, we're going to divorce. He talks about divorce all the time. And then when you have a social gathering and they make up, the husband and wife make up.
Right.
The family still remembers what had happened.
That's right.
Right. And then when you go to have the family, it's such, there's the elephant in the room, and it's, they've made up, the husband and wife made up, but the family will hold that like, and,
that's right.
And give the gestures and,
exactly.
Can't forget. Mm-hmm. And that's a big thing, is to forgive and to forget.
I think you can take it to a coach. You know, right. the grievances, you take it to a coach, you take it to a therapist, right. You take
exactly.
it to somebody
exactly.
who's not emotionally invested.
There you go. Not emotionally
that's
invested.
Right. And not
in the outcome of the thing.
Right.
Exactly. All right. So lesson 9. So we're on lesson 9 and 10. All right. So just wrapping it up here. So lesson 9 is be open to being wrong, because I say it all the time. I love it when I'm wrong, because a lot of times when I'm wrong, it means I'm growing. I'm learning. I'm transforming. I'm becoming a better version of me. So I say it all the time. I love being wrong. Now, you know, there's some things that I'm not wrong about, but a lot of times I'm wrong about, for example, head trash, right? Like I think I'm not good enough, and she will come in and show me that I can do something that maybe I thought I couldn't do. Maybe I thought I couldn't overcome that fear or whatever it might be. So there are things that it's really great to be wrong about, you know, that I couldn't do something or I'm not good enough, et cetera. So be open to those types of being wrong and you know.
And acknowledge when someone's doing it right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Catch people doing things right. Mm-hmm. And then our final lesson is really to ask better questions, which, of course, you knew I had to include that because one of the things I have been teaching for many years is affirmations. My affirmations, which we've already mentioned here on this program, you can go to affirmations.com and learn about how to ask empowering questions, which is my affirmations method. But the point is about asking questions that, you know, that elicit better answers, right? Instead of why am I so dumb? You know, why am I enough? And so the point is the questions that can help you see yourself better, help you see your partner better, help you see your spouse better, help you see your world better. These are the questions that have changed people's lives, changed our clients' lives over the last 2 decades. I could give you so many stories from people who have overcome addiction, who have not committed suicide, who've not gotten a divorce. We had a couple in Germany that wrote to me years ago, and they said, we were about to get a divorce. We had the divorce papers on the desk ready to be signed. You can't get any closer to divorce than the papers are there ready to be signed. And somehow the husband heard about me on a program, heard about me on the radio or on YouTube or whatever it might be, found my affirmations method, taught it to his wife, you know, shared it with her, and they started affirming using my affirmations method. They made up, they tore up the divorce papers. Now they're best friends. This was years ago.
But so,
I mean,
literally,
I mean, that's just one example of thousands. So the point is about asking better questions is, I do argue.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Because we're kind of out of time, but I do have one really good question for you.
Yeah.
Why is midlife love better?
Well, I mean, it just goes back to that old saying, youth is wasted on the young. And I know it was for me. I'd love to get in a time machine and go back and tell my younger self, dude, I mean, just hang in there, man. You're going to get something maturity pretty awesome. Too. So, but yeah, no, it sucked. My youth was awful. So that's why midlife love is the best, because you're just smarter and you got more seasoning under your belt.
This was so much fun. I would love to talk with the two of you forever. It's sort of like a double date, which we'll have to do at some point.
You're ever in this way, we'd love to have you come over.
As I said, I have family, so I will let you know.
Okay,
so
that's great.
Thank come you over. So much.
Thank you for listening to Crazy Sexy Midlife Love. Please sign up to join our free love family at crazysexymidlifelove.com. To get alerts to live shows, call in and ask questions, or just listen in. And ladies, don't forget to download Devin's free ebook, Women Are Smarter Than Men and Other Secrets Marriage-Minded Women Need to Know. Also available at crazysexymidlifelove.com.